Good evening, Flames fans, or perhaps morning or afternoon, wherever you might be. Welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered. We are your co-hosts, Brad Bird, and myself, Kyle Lewis. And this is the first time I've done that, so Brad, thanks for the opportunity.
Hey, all right, we're underway. We're a day late on the pod. We're sorry. We've had some crazy stuff happening.
Kyle's in personal turmoil, and Brad was sick as hell.
I was, and I don't know what's. I don't know. I got to tell you how my day started today, Cal. Before we get into the, before we talk about the bad things in Calgary, let's talk about my morning. So, I wake up. I'm walking down to my bathroom, and my daughter goes outside to get. We have a fridge in our garage with beer and pop and water and whatever. My daughter runs out in there to get a water out. I had not turned the home security system off at this point, which isn't really that big of a deal, but it starts beeping and it gives you a minute or whatever to punch in the code and you're good, right?
Right.
My wife is standing there and she goes over to the key box, punches in the code, and the screen is just frozen. It's just freaking frozen, right?
Because why not? So,
yeah, so I'm like, well, time is clicking now, right? And so I get on my phone, pull up the app. I'm going to hit disarm, no big deal, right? Yep. The app's frozen too. So guess what? 30 seconds later, I have the loudest freaking noise going off in my house. It is piercing noise. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. No one would rob my house at all if this noise is on. They would shoot me is what they would do. So I'm trying to get this thing off the wall. I'm trying to figure out there's got to be a way to unclip this off the wall so I can get it disconnected. Right. So I'm like, oh, I got to unplug it. So I go and I unplug it. Freaking still keeps going. I'm like, oh shit. Yeah. That's because it's got a battery in it too.
Yeah. Battery backup. Yep.
After like, 30 minutes. I managed to get it off the wall and get the battery out. You know what? Oh, God. It was just not a good way to start the morning. Not a good way at all. So.
No, that's a hard one to recover from for sure.
Stupid story, but stuff happens, I guess, right?
Well, lots of stuff happens and very little of it positive, if anything, if you're a Flames fan. So that's how I'm going to segue that. Brad's shitty morning to our shitty hockey team.
Where are we starting today? We have a lot to talk about.
Well, first off,
Kyle and I don't like to do these shows on game day, but I'm going to get this show out on game day because the Blues play against the Flames here shortly. Mm-hmm. But that being said, we still have a ton of stuff to talk about. And I think the best place to start is the Rasmus Anderson hit suspension appeal and all that.
Yeah. Well, I had tweeted this as well. I felt that the timing of it was 50%, if not more, of that suspension. It was such a dumb thing to do. The game is clearly lost. Like, it's not possible mathematically, really, to win at that point. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Some have tried to defend it. I do feel it was a dirty hit. He left his feet. I didn't think it was the most reckless hit I've ever seen by any stretch, but it was very stupid and the timing absolutely buried him. And that's why he got 4 games, is because of when he did it. If he does that in the middle of the game, I think he gets 2. What are your thoughts?
I'm not defending the hit at all. I thought it was horrible. I thought the timing was atrocious.
Immature. Very.
For a guy that we were going to have be captain, and I'll give him a pass on that simply because he has never shown us this before.
But that's what I was trying to think of, is if he had, and I couldn't think of anything.
Here's one of the problems I have with it. Am I upset about the 4 games? No, I'm not. The only thing that bothers me a little bit with it is that if I compare it to other things I've seen, a lot of other players get 2 minutes, or excuse me, two games.
Yeah.
And for him not having any history, it did surprise me that he got 4. Am I mad about it? No, because it was pretty egregious and the timing of it was atrocious.
Yeah.
The Flames appealing it so that he can play in the Heritage, I thought was a waste of energy. There's no way that Gary Bettman is going to go against player safety and change it. I mean, that's well, not
the wrong message. That was what their statement said, right? It's like, you know, however they worded it, you know, we don't weigh particular games in terms of a suspension, nor should they.
Well, I mean, think about it. That's like a little kid going to his mom and saying, "Mom, can I go outside and play?" And his mom's saying no, and he runs into his dad. "Hey, Dad, can I go out and play?" And his dad says, "What'd mom say?" "Well, she said no." "No, that's fine. You go ahead and go play." Who the hell's going to do that and create that fight, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it was dumb. And I mean, it's the only silver lining to any of it that has created a little bit of an opportunity for somebody else, namely Ilya Solovyov playing tonight, finally. I shouldn't say finally, but I mean, kind of surprised for some people.
You got the call up, and you know what? I think he's just what the Flames need. He is a steady.
Yeah,
I've said this all year. Steady, calming defenseman, and we need this because we're chasing all over the place right now.
Well, and it's also, you know, true to what management had said that youth had to be given an opportunity, and this is one of the first real examples of that. Apart from the guys who made the team at a camp, like the Matthew Coronado, obviously, but so yeah, you had from our Flames Unfiltered account had tweeted yesterday about apologizing to Daryl Sutter, and I really wasn't sure of the tone, because to me, absolutely not, but it is still a worthwhile question because it kind of goes in line with what Nikita Zadorov said in terms of, you don't want to play for the hard-ass coach, you want to play for the soft coach.
Well, and here's what I meant by that. And do I mean it? A little bit I do. I do a little bit. Simply because we were this team was a master at finding excuses last year. It's not us, the players. No. It's not us. It's this. It's our coach. He's hard, you know. And I'm not condoning. Okay, I'm not condoning all of Daryl Sutter's behavior. I do like a little bit of it. I do think some of the best coaches in the history of hockey were taskmasters. That's probably a good way to put it. Yep. I think accountability is huge, whether it's in the workplace, in school, or at the hockey rink. Yep. And if you're going to have a team and you're not going to hold people accountable, you're going to have a country club, and country clubs don't win. So that being said, do I let Daryl Sutter off the hook? No. But it created a lot of thought, I think, because there was quite a bit of traction on that tweet.
You got a lot of buzz on that one. That was a good one. I mean, and regardless of how it was intended or meant, it's a worthwhile question in terms of the question. I think was a bit rhetorical. It wasn't overly serious. That's not how I took it, but it got people thinking. A lot of interesting responses to that.
It wasn't that I wasn't saying that, you know, we should call Daryl Sutter up. I'm just saying that Daryl Sutter wasn't the only reason this team failed to make the playoffs last year. And I think we're seeing it this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are for sure. I think, and one of the things you've seen, and Robert Munich had written this for Flames Nation, talking about how, you know, the Flames need to listen to their fans. And as excited as we were at the time, and they were still great, you know, great trade in terms of Hubert and Uyghur, the team had an opportunity to rebuild and chose not to. And it's hard to do because there's pressure to make the playoffs for the revenue, for the fan base, for all that. But the opportunity to jump into a rebuild, they basically let it pass them by. And now we're mirrored in mediocrity again. Or still.
But I'll push back a little bit on that, Kyle.
Sure.
And the fact that I don't think rebuilds work. The last true rebuild that worked was the Pittsburgh Penguins. If you look at Vegas, was Vegas built on a rebuild? No.
Well, new team.
Was Colorado built? I know. It's pretty hard to have a rebuild with a new team. I get that. Colorado, were they built on a rebuild? No, they weren't. They were tweaked and massaged over a bunch of years. And they made good signings, and they didn't, like, flood their team with older people, right? They still had some veterans, but they didn't sign 33-year-olds to 8-year deals.
I think the language can be a little confusing too, because rebuild, retool, whatever you want to call it. The biggest difference with the Avalanche is that they had some cornerstone pieces that the Flames do not have.
Well, and they had cornerstone pieces, but on top of that, they had dynamic, strong veteran presence along the way. And then they had prospects that panned out along the way too. So they had a myriad of things have to go right to win a Stanley Cup. And it should be that way, right? But I don't know. I mean, people say, well, we need a complete rebuild in Calgary. And I'm like, okay, but how can you do that when you have Markstrom, Huberto, You have all these guys signed. Cotter, we can't go back on that.
So, no, but you've got to, as those contracts start to age, she may find.
Well, I'm not waiting 6 years for a rebuild here, though.
No, no, but I mean, even a year or two into these deals, like buyouts probably aren't realistic for any of them. But I mean, you can keep part of the salary and move on from it if you really find a good enough deal to do it. Like, all I'm saying is there's been some really unexpected creative trades in the past. But the thing that bothers me the most, sorry, go ahead.
I'm still not giving up on Huberto.
I'm not either. It's still very early. What we're seeing is concerning.
Very. And I'm not giving up on him either. But Kadri, I'm still not seeing. I've never seen any progress there. So,
I've been thinking about that, actually, and your comments on him and his play. And I got thinking about when he won that Stanley Cup and said everybody said I was a liability, can kiss my ass. And all he's been for the last probably 40 some games as a Flame is an absolute liability.
I know. And those are things that concern me more, because I do believe Huberto wants to be a winner. I do. I believe that. I believe Markstrom wants to be a winner. Yep. The difference with Kadri is Kadri's been a winner.
Yeah.
There's a difference. Your want level is different. And I know you hear some players say, well, once I won the cup, I wanted to win them again and again and again. And I do agree with that. But like, it's just a different desire when you've never tasted that, right?
Well, I would think so. The other piece of this, and this is really starting to bother me, regardless of how much the Flames turn this around, because as Robert's article had said, what's the goal? Squeak into a playoff spot? They're not a Western Conference power. They're not going to have a deep run. There's no reason at this point to believe any of that's in the realm of possibilities. What scares me, and this has come up many times in the last week, is the Hanifin stuff. And first of all, it was so stupid and a total waste of everyone's time to announce that Hanifin's going to speak to the media today. Because unless you're announcing a contract extension... I don't know. Unless you're announcing a contract, who the hell cares? Why would you get people all up talking about it, thinking about it?
I was so puzzled by that. Because
it made no sense.
On Saturday night, I heard Elliot Friedman say on, what the hell is that segment called?
32 Thoughts?
That's not the segment, though, is it? Maybe it is.
Oh.
What is the segment? Now it's bugging me. Elliot Friedman's segment on Hockey Night in Canada.
Oh, I can't think of it.
Whatever, it doesn't matter. Anyway. He says that Noah Hanifin was close to sealing a deal in Calgary, and then all of a sudden, was it a day or two later? It was 2 days later on Monday. We hear that Noah Hanifin's going to talk, and I'm like, so does that mean it's done? And then I don't know, that's like my
boss announced. My boss announces tomorrow, Kyle Lewis is coming to work today. It's like, well, yeah, of course he is. But if it was Kyle's hosting a meeting or has a special announcement, well, now you have my attention. Like, it was just stupid.
I don't understand the timing of it or the purpose of it or anything that has to do with it.
Yeah. But the thing that I... Sorry.
Where do we go with this contract? Do we want him to be signed?
No. He's a great defenseman, but this doesn't make any sense. Well, he's quite good. In terms of being a two-way defenseman, he's quite good. And he's still young, right? I don't understand, and we can talk about Noah Hanifin, Elias Lindholm, Chris Tanev, any number of people on this roster. Why is the team constantly trying to re-sign pieces of a failing team?
I'm sorry. I saw a thing today. We're going to get right back to Noah Hanifin, but this fits this what you just said.
Go ahead.
I saw a thing today on one of the Flames Facebook pages, not the Calgary, like the fan pages, Facebook fan pages. Mm-hmm. And somebody was complaining on there. Because Toffoli, we let him go and he's got 6 points in six games or 9 points in six games.
I'm like, do that in Calgary.
So were we supposed to throw $8 million or $6 million at another 35-year-old player and then bitch because we're not using our youth? Like, I don't get it. I don't get this fan base sometimes. And I love it because I'm part of it, but I look at some of the arguments we have and it's contradictory.
We say this sometimes, but I mean, isn't every fan base like this? They fight about stupid stuff. And they have, like, but yeah, that whole Toffoli argument holds no weight at all. He was never going to score at that pace in Calgary again. He had a big year because it was a contract year. And like, who cares? You cashed out.
So would you sign Noah Hanifin?
No, because he's taking somebody else's. I'd trade him.
Okay, so what do you think if we were going to sign him? What do you think it's going to be? I've heard it compared to the Uyghur contract at 8 years, 6.25. I've heard him compared to Devontae's at 7 years, 7.25.
That's too I think Taves made way too much money in that deal too, but that's just my own opinion. Great defenseman, but good God.
I don't hate Noah Hanifin. I hate some of his choices with the puck.
Yeah. But what is Noah Hanifin going to do to move the needle on a team in Calgary? What is keeping Noah Hanifin going to do to make us better?
Like, I'm fine signing him if we sign him at $6 million or below. Like, I can live with that.
But that's still going to be long term. I would rather trade him and then have somebody else, maybe a Jeremy Poirier, start to work his way into the lineup over the next season and a half or so.
I think we probably could utilize assets.
The cupboards are there.
We probably could utilize assets for Lindholm and Hanifin more than we could utilize them.
Yeah, and I mean, this isn't to say the team's not going to go on a heater and rattle off a few wins and be a lot better, right?
Oh, if we win today and we win on Sunday in Edmonton, it changes the whole script. And I understand that. And I'm not trying to sound like I'm in full panic mode. But I'm going to say something, Kyle, that's maybe going to shock you. I am more confident if we signed. I would be less upset signing Hanifin than I would Lindholm right now.
Yeah. Yeah,
because Lindholm is going to get a huge price tag, right?
And he's a lot older.
And he's older, and he is doing absolutely nothing to drag this team out of the doldrums. Nothing.
Well, he, as we talked about before, I think I'd mentioned this maybe in the summertime. I can't quite recall. On a line with Gaudreau and Tkachuk, he was as good as he was in terms of both sides of the puck. He was clearly the weakest link of the three, and it was reflected in his point production and his point production since they've both left. Elias Lindholm is not a 75-point player, seemingly. He's more of a 50 to 65 player.
So let's let another team figure that out.
Well, and I think Mike Gold, I mention him all the time because he has some pretty interesting takes, but he mentioned that, you know, Kent Johnson and Columbus have been scratched a lot lately. But he's so young, the Blue Jackets may not give up on him. But man, if you can make a trade with the Blue Jackets and Lindholm there and can bring in Kent Johnson, you do that all day long. I think. Guy's a blue chip prospect on a team such as ours that has virtually none. We have Dustin Wolf, Matthew Coronato, Jacob Pelche, if he was healthy. And there's some potential in guys like Connor Zare, Jeremy Poirier, Etienne Morin, although he's quite young still here in Moncton. Like, there's some good players, but on the roster itself, there's nobody dynamic and game-breaking. Mm-hmm. And with the Wranglers and below, there's nobody.
Nope.
Due to constantly drafting the middle of the pack. I wouldn't even say poor drafting. It's been much improved last year. At least they're producing NHL players, but not high-end NHL players. Not to this point. And Coronato might be one, sure.
Well, and another thing, and I'm, this is pure speculation, but okay, so let's say we sign Lindholm to, and I don't want to talk about Lindholm the whole show let's say we sign him to 8 years, right? 2 years from now, we really could have Samuel Hanzik ready to roll, and then where does he fit?
Oh, 100%. 100%. So while we're talking about where people fit, what is going on with, or what the hell do we do with Dan Vladar? Because he was awful in his last outing and has not been particularly good dating back to last season.
Can I draw? I mean, I got a lot to think about the goalies here.
Oh, I also want to point out that Big Save Dave had a shutout last night.
We don't want Big Save Dave.
But like 40 some saves. Good for him. Nice to see he's still hanging around.
I love that guy. I didn't love him in our net, but I loved him.
Some nights I did.
Dan Vladar is ranked 50th in the league right now. That is dead last in save percentage.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Jacob Markstrom is 35th in the league in save percentage. And I've heard
only 32 teams counting at home.
Uh-huh. I've heard a whole bunch of talk about, well, Jacob Markstrom's been good this year, and there has been times that he has made some good saves. But numbers don't lie. When you have, this is a mirror image of exactly last year. We have two goalies right now, Jacob Markstrom, 0.897, Dan Vladar, 0.842.
Oof, man.
That is the same as last year. This there is so much happening on this team right now that is a mirror image of last year. It makes me want to puke.
Well, and the only defense to that, or only grasping at straws I can offer, is that it's so early. And it takes time to weed out bad habits and players that aren't performing well. And hopefully, starting tonight, that changes.
Do what you? I got to answer your question, though, but that's not fair. You said, what do you do with Dan? I honestly...
I know what I do.
You might be thinking the same thing as me. I don't know that right now you just don't put him on waivers.
I was going to say, that's why I'm waving. I'd wave him.
I wouldn't waive him. I'd try to get him down to the AHL. I would put him on waivers and hope nobody takes him.
Yeah, well, if they do, you get some cap space, because I still think Dustin Wolf can be okay, at least as an NHL backup, despite his less than stellar training camp. I mean, he's still killing it with the Wranglers. So I don't think there's any danger in waiving him, because nobody's, first of all, it's unlikely anybody's going to take him because he's been so bad.
Did you watch Devin Levi in that Sabres game?
I did.
I still think that shot from the other end of the rink went.
Oh, from Wigger? That was in. Yeah.
Yeah. But
what does any other team fight with the goal cameras as much as the Flames? Whether it be Sam Bennett in 15, Jelena right behind you, and
I think they do. Ours just seem to be more
critical. I gotta watch the team, so I'm not so goddamn depressed. That's what I gotta start doing.
So okay, the reason I bring up Devin Levi is he struggled miserably this year. And that is my fear of, because now they're panicking in Buffalo. It's like, oh man, is Levi not going to be the guy? Is he not going to be the guy? Well, it's kind of six games in, like, take it easy. But that's my fear of what would happen in Calgary if Wolf struggled out of the gate.
Well, the goaltending position is more than any. Yeah, the goaltending position more than any other, I think, is susceptible to the mental side of the game.
Yeah,
like, it's big time. I think that's what we saw a lot of with Markstrom last year and why he struggled. But I don't know. There's two ways of looking at it, right? You got to give a guy a chance, or you could be hanging him out to dry. And the way the team's playing, it's more likely the latter, unfortunately.
I know, but eventually we got to, like, throw him the rope and hope he freaking hangs on tight, because this team ain't going to help him pull up, though.
No. Nope.
That's the problem.
We got a whole team of seventh-round picks. Solovyov, Wolf, I'd find a few others, but pretty crazy that they actually have, like, late-round picks that are panning out that well, even if this is as far as they go.
That's actually good. I mean,
it's very good. It's a little concerning that the top end of the draft isn't so good, but yeah.
So, you know, we talked about how there's so many similarities to last year's team. I went and I looked at this and I'm like, 5-on-5, right? We're fifth in Corsi. We're third in shots for. We're sixth in goals. We're 26th in shooting percentage. And 32nd in save percentage. So I can hear all these guys say Markstrom's back and stuff. Numbers don't lie. I'm sorry. They just don't lie.
Well, they've seemed like the advanced stats guys wouldn't love hearing some of this. I mean, I'm a believer in them to a point, but shot volume means nothing to me. I mean, look at the shooting percentage. You said 32nd?
26th. 32nd in goaltending.
Yeah, right. It's a 20.
I'm not an analytics guy. I sound like one today because I'm throwing all these numbers at you. Listen to this. Even strength offensive zone time, Calgary's third. We're in the offensive zone 53.8% of the time. The only teams better are the Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes. That's messed up.
Where's the Bruins on that list? Do you have it right there?
They're 19th.
So... And not to advocate for discarding any of these stats, because I do think they're valuable. But it's interesting because the analytics in this Vegas case. Is sixth.
Colorado's fourth. I'm throwing out the other good teams.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's some outliers. I mean
you know what's
Edmonton is 11th and they haven't played only won one game.
So here's the shame of all this, okay? If real hockey was like NHL 24 by EA Sports. All that offensive zone time, the goaltender would get tired and sleepy and he'd flop over and you would easily score goals like I haven't picked up lately because it's just fucking pickup. God, I hate that video game. I can't even enjoy fantasy hockey by playing a video game right now because the game sucks as much as the Flames do right now.
You want to talk about another thing that sucks right now?
I got all kinds of them, bud, laid on me.
That's our power play.
Oh,
When we talked last week, were we not in the top 10?
I believe we were. And I've been screaming Mark Savard's name from the rooftop for weeks now.
You have. That's why I threw this at you. Just to rough you up a little more today.
Yeah. We haven't talked about my morning, but
we're 27th in the league now, 12.5%. And I think I know the problem.
Dryden Hunt's on the second unit. That's problem number one.
We have nobody that has any offensive talent on this team.
Well, the ones that have some are on the power play. Like, where's Sharon Govich? Put that shot on the fucking power play.
Well, they got him up. Well, so Paul, we don't even know the lines anymore. I tried to look at the lines. I don't even know what the lines in this team are anymore. Supposedly, he's on the first line tonight with Huberdeau and Lindholm. I don't know, though. The only line that works on this team is Backlund, Coleman, and Mangiapane.
The one that we all knew was going to work.
And Ruziska, I want to talk about him. He's made a push this year. He's proved me wrong. I badmouthed him all year. And he's looked great. And then he takes a freaking hit from behind, as plain as day, hit from behind from Jimmy VC. Not even a call on the play. And now he's out day to day with a shoulder injury. Perfect.
Yeah.
It's just, it's frustrating. Did you hear about the Jeremy Peori injury?
I did. I didn't hear much about the extent of it, though.
Yeah, he had to have emergency surgery to repair a laceration. Not good.
No.
Not good. Out indefinitely. So, do we have anything good to talk about? Oh, if you want to make matters worse, now we have a draft pick that's in legal issues, too.
Go on.
I don't even know where else we can go. Where are we going to go with positive here?
I'm going to think about that while you talk about the situation.
Well, supposedly, and there's not a lot released, but the Flames released a statement regarding, is it Topi Roni or Roni?
Yeah.
22nd NHL draft pick who's... evidently, he's 19 now, and when he was 17, was being charged with, I haven't heard the exact charge, but it's a sexual in,
yeah.
I don't know what the details are in it, so I don't like to speculate and stuff like that, but it's not good. It's not a positive thing. I don't know. It doesn't look good.
Kind of reminds me of the accusations in Christian Eusebius years ago.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how to pull the nose.
You know what? I didn't know this was going to go off the rails so bad today. Because I do know that we're only six games in, and like, we probably shouldn't be hitting the panic button, and I feel like both of us are.
Well, you know what? That's become a real problem for me. In terms of whether it's work personally or even with this podcast, is the panic button's right there, almost like the Staples Easy button.
I know. Why is
that? This one's not fun to hit, but you hit it and you're like, why did I hit that? And you sit back and you look at your hand like it's covered in blood because you just killed someone. You're like, I know better than this. I'm a smart guy.
You know? I didn't want to come on today and just like crucify this team, but
all right, let's.
I'm looking at my notes and I can't find anything positive, though, Kyle.
Well, we're going to run it back for a minute because we got to remind ourselves of a few things. It's very early on.
Yeah.
So there's no need to panic at this point. Things change even when people think that they won't. And we have each other as miserable fans. Yeah. So take solace in that. X, Twitter, whatever. There's been a lot of negativity lately, and it's hard to argue against it. We understand why it's there, but again, it's really, really early. Just trust the process. Take your time. Poke your head in when you need to. If you need to vent, lean on your friends. And I'm now starting to make this about other things. But
yeah. I got something. There is though some positives that can come from this though. There really is.
Fire away.
Exactly.
I'm not sure what they are.
what they are right at the moment here, but you know, you do look. I mean, we are seriously. We're only six games into this. It's obviously not time to hit the panic button. I think what has me the most frustrated and the most concerned right now is that we're seeing so many of the problems from last year. Mm-hmm. And that's what's got me concerned. Now, can that change? You know, a win tonight over St. Louis moves us in the right direction. And you know what would really help? A quality performance from our goaltending, and it just an all-around quality performance. Get it, a couple guys going. And got, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have Lindholm or Kadri pop in a couple to get things going. And then we go into the Heritage Classic, and that brings up our X factor of the week. And I will pull that up onto the screen right now. It is from Adam at Kachuk U.
Great name. I like Adam.
He tweeted, Flames and Oilers might be fully out of the playoff picture by Sunday. What a way to let the outdoor game go to waste. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, everybody's talking about, and I don't disagree, but everybody's talking about this game and how the importance factor has went down in it just because both teams are miserable.
Well, McDavid won't play. Anderson won't play.
I'm flipping the script, though. Doesn't this make this game even more important? Because whoever wins this game, you win an Alberta Battle of Alberta game. That's an emotional win. That starts to pull you out of the doldrums. Maybe this can turn an Oilers season around or turn a Flames season around.
I'm going to guess it's been 15 years at least since I've heard the word doldrums, and you used it twice so far tonight. So kudos to you. We're big on articulation and vocabulary on this podcast.
We're big vocabulary guys.
Yeah, we really are. So thanks, Adam, because this is a very true and depressing but accurate tweet. What do you even call it now? Is it a tweet? You just call it a post?
I don't know. It's an X, man. I don't know. It's an X factor. That's what we call it, right?
As a weak odd, yeah, you know what I mean. Anyway, he's 100% right, and you're right as well. I mean, this game could launch somebody out of their misery. Maybe they go on an 8-game winning streak after, whoever comes out of the win. And the thing is, too, with Calgary's arguably best two-way defenseman out of the lineup and the best player in the world out of the Oilers lineup, I haven't got a clue who's going to win this game.
I don't either. But that's what, I mean, that might be the blessing in this whole thing is the fact that if we can somehow eke out a win against St. Louis and then win this game, we're almost 500 then. And you could probably find some positives in the game and finally maybe find some positives that we're going to be able to talk about next week.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've got to play hockey tonight, so I'm going to miss probably the first period of the Flames game, which is fine. But I'm quite eager to check it out. Sorry, if you hear the clicking, my dog just walked into the office because I think he's concerned about me with all the negativity in my life right now.
You got your support pet with you.
Oh, man, support. What's that?
To get you through the Flames season and the rest of life.
Yeah, he's got his own jersey. And, he's a good boy. He's a big help. So, a lot of rough times lately, right, bud? Anyway, I'd lift him up, but he's too big.
Tonight's game against St. Louis. The Blues are struggling miserably. They're currently 2-2-1 with 5 points, seventh in the Central. I hate to say it this way. If the Flames lose this one, then what?
Well, then we're at the point of the compulsory players-only meetings or honest conversations with yourselves and all the same rhetoric I've been hearing. And as much as I like hearing things like what Zadorov had to say the other day.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there seemed to be a lot of concern in the media about the fact that, oh, who's he calling out and who's he referring to? Well, he's referring to the fucking team. You know, he's been there long enough. He's a leader on that team. So I don't care who he's singling out. I have no doubt Kadri's one of them, like we've talked about. I suspect Huberto's one of them. But clearly, there's an issue with this group of players because they don't perform. And every now and then they do, and they give you hope, but generally they don't. And it's tiring. And, you know, he's exactly right. You can't blame coaches anymore. Ryan Huska is like a light Paul Maurice. He's a communicator. He's pleasant.
It's part of the reason why I tweeted out the Daryl Sutter thing, because Like, you can come up with excuses and excuses and excuses and excuses, and pretty soon you need to look in the mirror, right? And these players just do not do it. They just
it's a hard thing for anybody to do, and I get that. Like, people, in terms of recognizing their own mistakes and the things they could have done better or how they've hurt somebody else, like, it's not an easy thing to do in life, let alone in sports. But, I mean, at the end of the day, there has to come a time when you're willing to do it. But you can't force someone to do it, right? So you're just kind of waiting for these guys to figure out. It's like, okay, are they going to realize this or not? Because once again, we'll have another lost season.
Accountability, right?
Yeah, and real, like, at the end of the day, regardless of the team's performance, you can't have this much money tied up and this many people and be this close to the cap and not make the playoffs. You can't be a bigger failure in sports than that, especially when you're not crappy enough to get a high draft pick. And this is why the fan base gets so frustrated, and rightfully so. They're completely and utterly directionless. They spend a ton of money on a team that does nothing.
And I will go back, and I'm not going to throw stones at Brad for a living, because I was the first person to say I love the Huberto trade, and
we all did.
I didn't mind signing Kadri. I didn't like the dollar amount of the term, but that's what you had to do to get it. So that's what sucks. I didn't think things when those moves all happened. I in no way thought they would go as badly as they have.
No, nobody did. Even the Kadri signing was like, that was the one that signaled, like, hey, we're going to be like, Huberto and Uyghur was one huge thing, but then Kadri's like, wow, we're going to be, this could be a cup contending team. And it couldn't have been further from the truth.
Yeah.
And everybody was on board with those. I don't remember anybody saying, now, some people say, it's a lot of money.
They did.
And Kadri's a great player. But nobody could have expected these signings to turn out this bad, but now you've committed to that. So you kind of made the argument earlier, and I agree with you. I mean, if you can't rebuild because you're already too far down this path, you got to fix it.
You got to fix it. And you can tweak it. I don't know that there's a way to move Huberto, and I don't know that I would, but I do feel like there's a creative way to get Kadri out. And I don't know that, and I'm not in the room. I have no idea. But it just seems like something's missing there. And I look at this roster, and there's a lot of players, like, on paper that look really good. And right now, there's only a couple of them that I think are performing well. And I don't know. I don't know when that changes, and when we can get just even average play out of some of the players that are struggling. I think some average point production would really help.
Oh, 100% it would. 100% it would. But where do we draw? Okay, but we've mentioned several times it's early. We shouldn't be too negative. That's, you know, that's like flushing an old toilet. It just goes around and around until finally you just can't take it anymore, right? So where do we draw that line, I guess? It's always been like American Thanksgiving was kind of like the, you know, the telltale point. To me, if we're not back to 500 by game like 10 or 12, then I start to get really worried.
Well, I think, you know, if American Thanksgiving is the one I've always used as a measuring stick. And I think if we get to American Thanksgiving and we are not in a playoff spot, then I think you look at, okay, well, we don't re-sign Lindholm. Let's go get assets. Yep. Let's try to get creative and trade Kadri. I don't know if that can happen. Let's not re-sign Hanifin. Let's get assets. Let's not re-sign Tanev. Let's get assets.
Mm-hmm. And you can see teams that can do that.
I think I still might re-sign Zadorov. I do.
Well, you need some veterans in the team, right? But I think what kind of gets lost in all this, it's like, oh, they can't rebuild. They can't rebuild. But some teams do, and some of these guys who struggle for a year or two are revelations later. Jeff Skinner, Eric Staal, like Jonathan Huberto, as much as I don't want to say, could be one of those guys. He could go back to being a 75-point player maybe next season, if not this year, right? And that's kind of the kind of stuff you get to bank on. If you're going to start trying to retool and tweak this team, and one of the things you have to be willing to do, and there's no team worse at it, and history tells us, than the Flames, is you got to sell off on assets and do okay on them. And I'm saying nobody does it worse, because Calgary magically, and I mean magically, made the playoffs in 2015 after 2013, wherein they sold off their best pieces for either nothing or horrific, horrific returns. Remember Mark Condary?
Mm-hmm. Like, well, that reminds me.
Mark Condary reminded you of something?
Yes, but I'll ask it to you later.
You got to cash in, man. Everybody, like we talked about this before, everybody wants Chris Tanev for the playoffs.
Hey, we have three players. Four. No, one. We have three players that are going to be UFAs. Mm-hmm. We can get strong assets from. This team can't rebuild. We need to retool with those three assets. Yep. If we're not in a playoff spot at American Thanksgiving, you need to get the ball rolling on that.
So Chris Tanev fetches you at the deadline, at least, I believe. First-round pick and probably a pretty strong prospect.
Yep.
Noah Hanifin would be a similar return because he's young and so mobile.
What's Lindholm get you? Who needs a center like Lindholm for the playoffs?
Yeah, Lindholm gets you quite a bit. Quite a bit. Lindholm's a bidding war. There's four or five teams that are going after him. So even if the team does turn it around and start to perform better, this is more likely the route that I'm going to want to go.
Well,
it's a mistake to hand all this money over. It's a huge mistake. This team
rattles off 7 out of 10 or 6 out of 10 and turns the page here, then I'm okay. Then I can look at it and go, all right, we're learning a new defensive system and, you know, things were a little shaky. We get some saves and we get our shooting percentage better than 26th in the league. Perfect. I can live with this then.
Yeah.
I'm not saying sign all of them. I'm saying just be a little bit more careful.
Well, but that's exactly it, is be more careful. Just because you're on the cusp of a playoff spot or you make the, like, this is not a championship team. Sign a
deal if it's the right deal.
But that's the thing. But just re-signing everybody because you like them?
No.
It's ridiculous. Every job, every workplace has depreciating assets. We've had sales guys that do the same job as me that were top of the game for years. They get older, they're near retirement age. Maybe they take on different roles, but eventually they don't want to work as hard anymore. And I can't blame them. They put their time in, right? That's life.
Yep.
And like hanging on to these guys that could be better served to have a fresh start somewhere else and bring the team that they loved so much, what they need to get better. That's what you have to do. And like, if we start handing out contract extensions, we're in for the same mediocrity year after year until these deals finally start to expire. And by that point, they're already overlapped by other deals to other players who are being overpaid or given too much term.
I think we can.
That's the change.
I think we can turn this team around pretty quickly, utilizing those assets properly.
And one of the guys, I'm just going to throw this out there, and actually, Jim Gaudreau and I have talked about this a few times. That's Johnny's uncle. So, Sean Monahan, his injuries were terrible, and the team didn't really stand by him. I felt, and they moved on from him, and I can understand why from a team perspective, but. Seeing him have some measure of success in Montreal and revive his career even a little bit is really, really good to see. And those are the kind of stories that you look for in hockey when your team is not performing. You think about guys you really cheered for. And I've met Sean Monahan. I met his father. Great people. As you see these guys move on and have, you know, seasons lost to injury or concussion problems, all that kind of stuff, and you see them have some measure of success playing along guys like Suzuki and Caulfield in the power play in Montreal, it's like, you know what, good for him. Because when your team is in the dumps like that, you can start to look to players you always enjoyed or other teams maybe you enjoyed a bit and say, you know, I want to see how these guys do this year. My team, I'm not going to write them off. They're always going to be my team. And that's one thing I don't stand for. People are like, oh, the Flames are terrible. And, you know, I can't believe I spent all this money on the team. Hey, man, it's your team. That's your team. You chose that team. People say to me all the time, oh, it's, you know, why don't you get another team? Or, you know how much money and time, even this podcast that I've tied up in this fucking hockey team, you think I'm going to find another one? No.
No.
Absolutely not. Anyway, my point of my rant is, and there's been several rants out of me in the last few days, like you got to find things in hockey that you enjoy. Because what we're talking about, and all, you know, you and I would both very clearly admit this is one of the more difficult podcasts we've had, the most difficult one so far this season.
Yeah.
It's not fun to talk about the team being shitty, but it's still fun to talk about hockey and to talk about your team.
I don't think either one of us are a negative person. I don't like being negative. But it was.
Oh, I've been circling it before, but I mean it's a choice you have to make.
When I'm looking at all the things on the docket this week that happened that we needed to discuss, I'm like, well, I can't find a positive here.
Yeah, a
couple wins would make me change my mind, and I do see if we utilize assets correctly that we can not be like this for the next 10 years. I do believe that. I think we need to be smart.
But it starts with one thing. It's that one, maybe it's a Tanev trade. And I love Chris Tanev. It's not that I want him gone. But maybe you trade him for two good pieces, and all of a sudden the outlook starts to change, right?
Snowballs, right? And maybe you can turn one of those first-round picks that you get into another asset that we can utilize today.
Remember Nashville and Washington? Martin Erat for Philip Forsberg? Like, those things do happen, but you got to roll the dice on doing them. And even back to this whole Toffoli thing, that was a really good trade return. That draft pick and Sharon Govich, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, you know, people bitch about everything. And like, I just saw that and it got me fired up this morning. I'm like, God dang it. If we'd assigned Toffoli, the whole fan base would have been up in arms.
He's on a team with Jack Hughes. I could score on that team.
I mean, geez, like, I don't know. Like, we just seem like we're never happy. I got a question though, before we leave today. You're a Jersey guy and you're my guy I go to on jerseys. I was listening to a television show this morning, and they were talking to Jordan Eberle. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about his first NHL goal. And do you remember it? It was against the Calgary
Flames. Oh, yeah. Corey Sarich was on the ice, stretched out, kicks off. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can replay my head. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Infuriating, beautiful. Yeah.
As he was sliding on his back, heading into the boards on that beautiful goal, I see a Flames player skate into the screen, and I saw the number 66. And I'm like, who the hell?
It's TJ Brody. Yeah.
Was that TJ Brody?
It was. Yeah.
I was like, who the hell was wearing 66? Yeah. I don't even remember anybody wearing 66.
He switched to 7 pretty quickly, but yeah, I remember that. Wow.
Well, that figures.
How impressed are you that I knew that right away?
Well, that's why I asked you. And when I saw this morning, I thought I'll file this shit away because that's something goofy that Kyle will know. And you nailed it right away. Boom.
You see what Solovyov is wearing for his NHL debut?
What?
68.
98.
The same thing that he wore in training camp. I think that's cool. I really
that's
do.
That's awesome.
Yeah. that's you know, we need to make a drinking game some night, and we'll do a show, and we'll do it around just jersey numbers. We'll just pick obscure numbers and list off the first player that comes to mind.
There's some out there that are pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Do you remember 00? If I was a goalie, I'd be 00. Can't be anymore. There's a league rule.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Wasn't Martin Biron 00?
Yes, he was. That's a great jersey recollection. You see that? That's a great one. And that's a funny one. Like, remember in the early, I guess the late 90s, early 2000s, it was all these goalies that people thought were like the next goalie, like John Graham in Boston behind Byron Defoe, or Marty Biron behind Hasek in Buffalo. And they all kind of became like, well, didn't Jim Carrey win a Vezina?
Yeah, his first year.
That is one-hit wonder. Wild.
Yeah, one-hit wonder.
95?
Probably 94, 95. Yeah, somewhere right there.
Way too deep.
Thank God we have loyal fans that'll listen through this.
Actually, we got a pretty great following. It's pretty fun. And kudos to you for really, you know, kicking up the fan engagement this year. It's especially with the X Factor. It's been pretty cool. And your ridiculous stutter tweets riling everybody up.
You know, I didn't know that would get so many people riled up, but it did.
Well, I like it because when you tweet, there's a lot of emotion behind it, and emotion sparks reaction, right?
Well, I've had to rein it in a little bit, right?
That's exactly what I'm trying to do with, with myself a lot of days. It's just, you know, you're going to blow and you're like, listen, this is not worth it. Or there's a better approach to this. Or why am I behaving like this? Like, and then you go to watch your hockey team and it makes it all worse. But hopefully not tonight. Hopefully by the time you listen to this, you think, man, these guys are negative. We just blew out the Blues. It was a great game. They should have recorded after.
I know. Maybe that's the ticket. Maybe we need to do this for more games. Either way, Kyle's got to go. He's got to go play hockey, so we got to go. I don't know what we're talking about next week. I have no idea. I'm hoping it's positive. Please be positive. We just want to see a few wins. I want to enjoy the Heritage Classic. I know you'll watch that game on Sunday. And I don't know.
Cross your fingers and toes. unless you have a broken toe like mine, then don't cross the lines.
All right, Flames fans, we'll see you next week for another episode of Flames Unfiltered.
Thanks for listening to Flames Unfiltered with Brad Berube and Kyle Lewis, your source for unfiltered Calgary Flames hockey talk. Keep it locked on flamesunfiltered.ca. Subscribe where you get all your podcasts to never miss an episode. Flames Hockey Talk every week, presented by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Flames Unfiltered. As we leave the show, a new song from the group Booze and Tuna. This one's called Ground and Pound. Check them out on their website at boozeandtunanation.com.
She's just lining it up and knocking them down, feeling out that ground and pound.